We've been talking a lot about how things change, the perspective, the way you see things in the regular season, and then two or three games into the playoffs, and things can change also. But one of the constants this year has been the play of Dennis Wiedemann. Last year, disappointing year for him and the team. You wondered if maybe this was a marriage that was soon to end. Instead, he comes back this year, plays pretty well, although healthy scratched early. Was it game two? Was given the old heave-ho by Edmonton. Bob Hartley. And then starts playing more, starts playing better. Giordano goes down, and he has been terrific. Here's a little, here's a voice you might recognize. Grapes, really liking what the Flames are getting from Dennis Wiedemann.
Dennis Wiedemann, listen, he's right up there with the best defenseman in the league. I got the last guy on the ice, the captain like that, the leader usually is the guy. This is something, this guy is something with the puck. He knows the pucks. I got him circled so you see them. Look at that, moves the puck out. This is old-time defenseman. You love these guys. This is the kind of guy that you have to get in Edmonton. That's all you need, a couple of guys like that. And I tell you, boy, you've got it made. I know this. Imagine Boston getting rid of him.
I know that Flames fans, this is not breaking news, but Eric, if you were to say a year ago that A, the team's going to be in the playoffs, and B, they're going to be in position to move to round two, and their most important guy on the blue line is probably Dennis Wiedemann. I mean, you'd be getting some weird looks.
Weird looks and thinking, you know, should have bought a lottery ticket on that combo, right?
Yeah, so, no kidding.
Well, it's funny, like, I, you know, but I agree with you 100% because my perception going into the season was, okay, so you sit down there and you think it through. Okay, where is this team going? And what, you know, do you imagine the new regime is going to do? And it's like, there should be improvement because, you know, you've got young players coming in. Let's see what Gaudreau can do. But, you know, the reality is it probably isn't going to result in a playoff spot. So when you get to the trading deadline, who do you move? Well, Glenn Cross is on an expiring contract. That one was easy. But, you know, I have to tell you, you know, in my mind, Jiří Hudler and Dennis Wiedemann, I thought, okay, Hudler, you know, Tampa might be interested, the Yzerman connection, you know, a pretty reasonable contract. You know, he's a good team player. You know, some you might be able to get something for Hudler. And that's like, wow, if Wiedemann can pick it up, you know, I mean, it's a lot of money, but the way the game is played right now, a guy that moves the puck, a guy that can, you know, be the power play quarterback, he's a guy that you could probably move to. So what happened? I mean, the circumstances changed, and suddenly two of your most valuable players are probably guys that might have been trade deadline or a deadline bait if it had gone in a different direction, if the spiral had been negative rather than positive. So I sat down with Wiedemann about a month ago, and I don't know if I told you this or not, but I pulled out the media guide, and I said, let's start at the beginning. So I pointed to London, and then I pointed up here, and I said, you were drafted in the eighth round. I said, the eighth round doesn't exist anymore. Honest to God, like, is there another eighth round draft choice in the National Hockey League? I don't think so. You know, I mean, I guess I have to call Elias because now I'm curious. But for him to go from being an eighth round pick, passed over in his first draft, and he said, yeah, by the way, that wasn't my first year of eligibility. I was passed over the first year. And it's like, wow. I said, okay, so how did you get from there to here? And we went through it. And basically, he started with the fact that the lockout in 2004, 2005 changed everything for him. He said it changed everything for him, and it changed everything for Chris Russell. He said because he wasn't the fastest guy, he wasn't the biggest guy, he wasn't the top, but he could move the puck. And the game changed, and there became a premium put on puck-moving defensemen. And when you think about it, exactly right. That's exactly right. And so, you know, and then, the rest, you know, he got to the point where, you know, people do forget, this guy was a 50-point defenseman in the National Hockey League before. That was the whole point of bringing him in, the whole point of giving him the contract that he got. But you're right, he's been really good and, you know, gotten to know him a little bit, like his sense of humor. You know, even he, I think, would admit that sometimes it takes people a while to get his sense of humor because, you know, he's a little bit sarcastic and he teases and you know, some people take that the wrong way. But, you know, I think he's, you know, like fully integrated in the dressing room, fully understood by the players that he plays with, and really fully appreciated within that dressing room for what he's accomplished and what he's doing for the Flames right now.
Yeah, you know, and to go one step further, and I mean, you can include everybody, right? Jay looked it up, 241st overall in 02.
Yeah.
Mark Giordano undrafted. TJ Brody was what, a third or fourth round pick, as was Chris Russell, right?
Yeah, and Russell was basically a free player because he'd been on waivers and they ended up making a deal for him, but they could have got him on waivers. So yeah, when you think about you know, how it evolves. It you know, like sometimes it does go by the book. Sometimes Sam Bennett, fourth overall, you know, is exactly what you think he is. Sean Monahan, sixth overall, exactly what you think he is. Because teams, that's the other thing. You know, think about what it was like 25 or 30 years ago. There would be players drafted sixth overall, Scott Sissons, who never played, right, or hardly had any career at all. I mean, the Flames had a couple of them, and Daniel Tkachuk and Rico Fatta. Teams have a greater tendency to get that right now. Scouting is sophisticated. You know, players are identified at a much earlier age. There are not very many mistakes anymore at the top end of the draft. And so, you have to credit 30 teams because even the bad ones don't get it wrong very often. But it's finding those other guys. That's still the hardest part of being a good organization, because if you can get the guys right that you're supposed to get right, and then get another player in every draft, or just find a college free agent, or just identify somebody that you can bring into the organization and becomes more than you think he's going to be. That's how you become a consistently winning organization. That's what Detroit does. That's what San Jose did until they sort of veered off the path. You have a chemistry and an ethic established, and then you just keep feeding players in at the bottom of it. And it's hard to do, because there is ebb and flow in professional sport, and eventually the team up the north drafts four times first overall, and eventually they got to get good. But I think you can create a model organization by doing that, and they've been right on these defensemen that they put in their system a lot more often than they've been wrong.
I want your take on two things that kind of tied together. Willie Desjardins taken some criticism in his coaching and handling maybe of the Sedins. And what are the Sedins? Because, these are two guys that have been around a long time, 75 points or roughly thereabouts this year, but not a lot of impact in the series so far.
Right. Well, first of all, I am not part of the group that is, criticizing Desjardins, because I think he made the point the other day that this is how they played all year. But last year, the criticism was that Tortorella overplayed the Sedins. They didn't have anything left in the second half, and it lessened their effectiveness. And it was the worst years of their respective NHL careers. This year, especially in the second half, they bounced back in a big, meaningful way. So they had good bounce back seasons, and part of the reason was that they're 34 years old and they just can't, they never really were great when they played, over 20 minutes. So I think they were handled just right. I think they were the key offensive guys on that team. They don't make the playoffs without the Sedins having the kind of year that they've had, because their secondary players were better, but none of them had sort of the impact that the Sedins did. So what he did to get their careers back on track was exactly right. Why would you change that in the playoffs? You wouldn't. So I think that that is bogus. I think that you have to everybody says this, like, we play our game, right? We play our game. We deploy our personnel the way we do because that's what got us here. But why have they been so ineffective in the playoffs? That I don't know. I actually thought the Sedins would have a very good playoff, just because they got stronger as the season went on. And if you were looking at the NHL scoring tables, they were creeping up, and I think Daniel was 18th at the end and had a very good year. I mean, he was on my Lady Bing ballot this year because I thought that they were both really good. So I think you just have to say credit to the Flames for doing a good job of A, killing penalties, because a lot of times the impact that these guys have is on the power play, and B, they're hard on everybody. They're hard on everybody. Ferland made that famous joke a few days ago about how his mom said, "Leave those guys alone," because she loves them, right? But and it was like, well, you're not going to do that. No, I got to hit up. Right? So I think that that they are the type of players that you can lean on and wear down physically, and I think that maybe you're starting to see that in this series.
He's Eric Dehatchik, our guest here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan, and anticipating Ryan Miller will be the goaltender. Do you anticipate that this could be a series-changing move by the Canucks, or is this just the last act in desperation by Desjardins?
Well, it's a great question, because Ryan Miller, didn't exactly come in and ride to the rescue in Vancouver this year. He had a good year for them, but he didn't have a great year. I'm not one of these people that is slavishly addicted to the numbers, but his save percentage was, a little bit above average. He was a good player for them, gave them, steady goaltending. I don't think he gave them the level of goaltending that they'd previously gotten. when Luongo was at his prime or when Corey Schneider was coming through the ranks. I think both of those guys are still elite-level goaltenders. Schneider's numbers on a really bad New Jersey team this year were really, really good. So, I mean, to me, it's a move that could go either way, simply because, you know, sometimes a goaltending change, you know, like Ottawa has responded to the goaltending change. You know, Anderson, a stabilizing veteran guy, has come in and been very good for them. Very good. You know, they could almost be 2-2 in that series because of how well he played in Game 3, the game that they lost. And Miller has the capacity to do that. But he's also rusty. I don't think that the Flames got a ton of shots at him. I don't think they got a lot of, you know, quality, high-end scoring chances, and the best chance that they had was the one that Mason Raymond fired off the crossbar that, you know, that probably should have been a goal. So I don't know. Like, to me, you're taking a bit of a risk because Lack has been good. I don't think he's the reason that they're behind in the series. Two deflections and, as Miller said, a backdoor goal. You know, it's hard to fault him. He didn't, you know, make those saves, but on the other hand, those are really difficult stops to make. You know, if Miller performs like he did in his last start, which was that 6-5 regular season game against the Edmonton Oilers, I mean, it could be over tonight. I just don't know. Like, when it's a rusty goalie coming in, you know, it could be a motivated guy, a guy who's rested, a guy who's sharp and, you know, stands on his head, and it's a shutout, and now you're back to Calgary and you think you're back in the series, and the pressure reverts to the Flames because you kind of want to win on home ice rather than, you know, go 7. And so I don't know. I mean, I guess that's why they play the games. And I don't even have a feeling of, you know, this is a bad move or this is a good move. I don't, you know, what do you guys think?
Yeah, I know. I don't know how much, I don't know the distance between where Eddie Lack ends and Ryan Miller begins, if there's much there, you know?
Yeah, okay, that's a very fair point. And I mean, I think, put it this way, I think other parts of Vancouver's game have to be a lot better and will probably be a more significant factor in the outcome tonight than the goaltending, which has been constant. It's been, you know, it, like I said, it hasn't been great for them this year. It hasn't been bad for them. It's been good enough. And so, you know, they just need more from the 18 position players. And if they get it, then, you know, then I guess we'll see where we're at.
Anything to take from the other games last night? I mean, obviously the Ducks clean up the Jets, and you know, kind of sad to see the Jets go. But
boy, I do feel bad, you know. And I think I said this to you 2 days ago. You're not supposed to in our business because, you know, I mean, whatever happens. You report on it, away you go. But I just thought. And this speaks to the fans. I mean, the fans just, they care so much, and they are so passionate about it. And now, you know, they still, as a franchise, have no playoff wins. And I would have just liked to seen them get one. You know, I mean, if this works out the way it's going to, and it's Anaheim and Calgary, what a great series that's going to be. There's so many backstories, right? You know, Jonas Hiller going against his ex-team. You know, to me, I can imagine a Kiprusoff scenario. Remember how when the Flames got Kiprusoff, and then they went right back, and they beat San Jose in the playoffs that year, or the next year, or whatever it was? It was great. And that's the scenario that builds up the fact that Calgary hasn't won there since, you know, the creation. It could be a really good series. They never didn't have a Ferland type of guy. You know, Anaheim kind of pushed him around a few times this year. I'd love to see it. Good on Anaheim. They deserve the series win. But Winnipeg/Atlanta is 0-8 in playoff series since the franchise came in. It would have been nice to see them get one. I didn't think that Winnipeg was as good in this game as they were in the others. I think on balance, you know, three really close games. It didn't feel like a 4-0 series, but that's how it goes sometimes. Sometimes, you know, one team gets the momentum and the other team, you know, starts to, you know, lose it and get discouraged and that's kind of how it went. But yeah, it would have been nice to see Winnipeg get at least one in this series.
Pittsburgh.
Another one where, you know, most of us, you know, like I said 7 really tough series to pick, and the other one, you know, Rangers over Pittsburgh. I think 100% of the people that were picking agreed that that was going to be the case, that Pittsburgh would be a pretty easy out if there was one easy out in this year's playoffs. And yet, you know, they played hard and well in those two home games and probably deserved a better fate. I think that's another series that should be 2-2. And if it was 2-2, I think there'd be an awful lot of intrigue. But, you know, the Rangers just seem to, you know, find ways. You know, in the same way that Anaheim this year, not last night, but Anaheim this year won a ton of one-goal games. And you think to yourself, can they actually sustain that? Can they just keep winning, you know, just finding ways to win? How do they do that? Well, that's a bit with New York. You know, like New York, after the first, you know, month and a half of the season, just won more than anybody else in the National Hockey League. And you think, wow, Derek Brassard is their number one center, and they're winning so consistently, and they've had different guys in goal. But, you know, they just play defense so well. And I think that that group of stay-at-home defensemen, you know, the Stahls and the Girardis and the McDonoughs, you know, they have frustrated the Penguins. And I don't believe Evgeny Malkin has a point in the series. And I think that's the key, too. You know, I mean, Crosby's been pretty good, but Malkin's been a non-factor. And Pittsburgh, if they were going to win or at least be more competitive in the series, was going to need more from that second line.
Thank you, Eric. Are we going to the Dome Saturday?
I asked you that yesterday. Last time I got it wrong. So you're looking for me to what, to get a two wrong in a row?
That's right.
I honestly don't know. You know, yeah. Like I said, the goaltending is the X factor in this thing. Like if it's 3-0 for Calgary after the first period because Miller just hasn't had a good night, then you know, then we can start looking forward to, you know, writing our Jonas Hiller against his former team stories. But I don't know. I'm not going to go out on a limb this time.
All right. Well. Because you're a Hall of Famer and we like you, we'll just let you off the
hook. You'll let me stay right there
on the
fence?
That's right. Well, but we will talk to you next week.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.